What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the pod. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler and can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball related from Tuesday, June 9th. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league, kicking things off with the bad news. As starting pitcher Jameson Taillon was placed on the 15-day IL with a hamstring strain, Taillon is expected to be sidelined beyond the All-Star break. So this is clearly a significant hamstring strain for Taillon. With him out of the rotation, Javier Assad should shift from the bullpen to the rotation as a traditional starter moving forward. In a corresponding move, reliever Ethan Roberts was recalled from the minors. Next, reliever Cooper Criswell was placed on the 15-day IL with a shoulder strain, and reliever Nick Davila was recalled from the minors by the Mariners. Next, outfielder Lamont Wade Jr. was placed on the 10-day IL with a hamstring strain. He had just started making a name for himself with the Astros, but he'll head to the IL with a leg injury. Outfielder Joey Loperfido was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move and will be on the strong side of a left field platoon with Bryce Matthews in Houston. And lastly, Tyler Freeman was placed on the 7-day IL with a concussion after being hit in the head by a Jacob Mizorowski fastball. Out of all the fastballs in baseball, that's probably the one you least want to get hit in the head with. Not that you want to get hit in the head with any fastball, but Mizorowski's fastball is incredible. So Freeman will rightfully so head to the IL with a concussion. Outfielder Cole Kerrig was selected from the minors in a corresponding move. He's the Rockies' number 6 prospect, according to MLB Pipeline, and he batted .338 with 6 homers, 30 steals, and a 129 WRC plus as a 24-year-old at AAA this year. He produced career best marks in walk rate and strikeout rate as well, and Kerrig will play center field every day, pushing Jake McCarthy to left field to replace Tyler Freeman. So Kerrig, certainly someone to pay attention to, given his improvements in the plate discipline department and the high batting average, as well as the speed that Kerrig brings to the table. In terms of transactions, starting pitcher Dylan Cease was activated from the 15-day IL after missing the minimum time with a hamstring strain. He started versus the Phillies, tossing 6 innings, allowing 3 hits and 1 earned run, walking 1 while fanning 11, inducing 29 whiffs with 42% CSW across 93 pitches, and Cease earned the golden goal in his return to the majors, leading baseball with 29 whiffs for the Gallows Poll and earning the King Cole by leading baseball with 42% CSW. Those 29 whiffs are the most in MLB this season, and they're the most by a starter in Blue Jays history, and they're tied for Dylan Cease's career high. He was incredible. 10 whiffs on the four-seamer, 8 on the changeup, which has been a new pitch for him this year, and 7 on the slider. What a beast Dylan Cease is, and he's definitely an auto start wherever he ends up pitching. Reliever Adam Mako was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Next, outfielder Nathan Church was activated from the 10-day IL after missing a couple weeks with a shoulder strain. Outfielder Victor Scott II was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. So the outfield alignment for the Cardinals will be Lars Nootbaar in left field, Nathan Church in center, and Jordan Walker in right field, with Nelson Velasquez and Brian Torres seeing time in the outfield as well. Next, catcher Francisco Alvarez was activated from the 10-day IL after missing just 4 weeks following surgery to repair a torn meniscus. Alvarez was expected to miss 6 to 8 weeks, so it's very impressive and, you know, a little bit concerning that he missed just 4 weeks. Alvarez will be the everyday catcher for the Mets, pushing Luis Torrens to the bench and sending catcher Hayden Sanger to the minors in a corresponding move. Next, outfielder Luis Lara signed a 7-year, $31 million extension with the Brewers. It comes with club options for 2033, 34, and 35, so 3 years of club options for Luis Lara on his 7-year, $31 million extension with the Brewers. He is a 21-year-old who has reached AAA this year. The deal also can max out at $79 million if all of the options and the bonuses are activated. So there's definitely potential for more earnings for Lara. Like I said, $31 million guaranteed, but potential for $79 million from Luis Lara. As a 21-year-old at AAA this year, he's taken his game to another level, batting .338 with 7 homers, 18 steals, a 155 WRC+, and more walks than strikeouts. So very impressive impressive at AAA from Luis Lara, who is the Brewers' number five prospect, according to MLB Pipeline. But just like Cooper Pratt, who signed an extension earlier this year, Lara is not guaranteed to make the roster anytime soon. Yes, he's tearing up AAA, but the Brewers have a very solid outfield consisting of Jackson Churio, Garrett Mitchell, and Sal Frelick with Blake Perkins on the bench. So, you know, plenty of opportunities in the outfield. There's plenty of good, solid major leaguers in the outfield right now. So the Brewers aren't, you know, or they don't have an urgent need for Lara. So despite how good he's been, despite the extension, he won't be up right away. However, that does sort of lay the groundwork for him to at least be up to start next year, or to be up as soon as the Brewers deem him ready. They're not going to hold him back for playing time reasons because they have him locked in to this extension. So a little bit exciting there for Luis Lara with the extension. Next, starting pitcher David Sandlin was optioned to the minors by the White Sox after he struggled in two starts following an impressive debut. Starting pitcher Joe Rock was recalled for the minors in a corresponding move. He was acquired via trade from the Rays in May, and he struck out 31% of the batters he faced in four starts after his trade from the Rays to the White Sox. And Rock is expected to make his White Sox debut on Saturday versus the Dodgers, but the White Sox haven't announced a starter today versus the Braves, so maybe Rock makes his White Sox debut today. Certainly someone to keep an eye on, but definitely not starting him versus the Braves or Dodgers. Next, another White Sox move. Outfielder Riku Nishita was optioned to the minors, which sort of sucks, but the corresponding move is very exciting. As outfielder Braden Montgomery was selected from the minors. He's the White Sox number two prospect, and he's the number 21 prospect in MLB, according to MLB Pipeline. Montgomery was the 12th overall pick in 2024, and he was the headliner of the Garrett Crochet trade a couple of years back. And Montgomery is a switch hitter who batted 314 with 10 homers, 5 steals, and a 152 WRC plus while walking 15% of the time as a 23-year-old at AAA. And he had a very exciting debut. Montgomery hit a walk-off home run in his MLB debut against the Braves, becoming the fifth player in MLB history to hit a walk-off in their MLB debut, joining Carlos Perez, Miguel Cabrera, Josh Bard, and Billy Parker, the most recent being Perez in 2015. So very exciting to see what Braden Montgomery can do moving forward. He should for sure get everyday playing time in the outfield for the White Sox. On the north side of Chicago, Matt Shaw was activated from the 10-day IL after missing a couple weeks with back tightness. Shaw will play all over the field, infield and outfield, allowing the Cubs regulars to get a rest or shift to DH to get off their legs. So Shaw's flexibility as a super utility backup guy is integral to the Cubs' success. Outfielder Kevin Alcantara was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Next, reliever Garrett Whitlock was activated from the 15-day IL after missing the minimum time with knee inflammation. Whitlock will be the top setup man in Boston to closer Aroldis Chapman, and second baseman Anthony Siegler was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And lastly, starting pitcher Cade Morris was optioned to the minors after allowing 9 runs in his MLB debut. Morris should get another chance down the line, but for now, reliever Joey Estes was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. Estes has actually been a starter at AAA and most of the time throughout his career, so he could replace Morris in the rotation or pitch as a bulk reliever for the A's as they figure out their fifth starter spot. And in terms of news, starting pitcher Jack Kochanowicz will undergo Tommy John surgery and miss the remainder of the season. He was just placed on the IL with elbow inflammation, but an MRI revealed a torn UCL. So Kochanowicz will miss the rest of this season and most of, if not all, of the 2027 season. It's a big blow to the always pitching hungry Angels. And lastly, starting pitcher Jake Bennett is expected to be recalled from the minors to start in Tampa Bay for the Red Sox today. Now we can take a look at our notable performances from Tuesday, a day in which we had a full slate of 15 games. We'll start it off with our hitters, leading off with first baseman Matt Olson, who did all he could, but the Braves lost to the White Sox. He went 2-for-4 with 2 runs, 2 home runs, 3 runs batted in, and a walk for good measure. He's up to 19 home runs on the year now. The first one went 411 feet at 103 miles per hour, and the second one 402 feet at 103 miles per hour. Olson is atop the leaderboards this year. He's tied for second in baseball in doubles with 19. He's also third in baseball with 50 runs batted in and 49 runs. He's fourth in MLB with a 561 slugging percentage, and he's tied for fourth in MLB with his 19 home runs. So an incredible season thus far for Matt Olson. Next, catcher Dylan Dingler continues his hot month as he helped the Tigers to win against the Twins, going 4-for-5 with 3 runs, a double, 2 home runs, and 4 runs batted in. He's up to 16 homers on the year now. The first one went 382 feet at 100 miles per hour, and the second one went 367 feet at 97 miles per hour. Dingler leads American League catchers with his 16 home runs, and he trails just Hunter Goodman among MLB catchers, who's he's up to 18 home runs on the year now. Dingler is also tied for the MLB lead in home runs in June with 5. And yeah, you guessed it, the other guy with 5 is Hunter Goodman. So we got a pair of catchers going off in the month of June. And lastly, outfielder Jack Caglione helped the Royals to win, going 3-for-3 with 2 runs, 2 home runs, 3 runs batted in, a walk, and a steal to complete the combo meal. Big day for Caglione. He's up to 8 homers and 3 steals on the season. His first homer went 421 feet at 108 miles per hour, and the second one went 431 feet at 105 miles per hour. Caglione has had much better batted ball luck this year than he did last year when he had a sub-200 BABIP, but he's still struggling to parlay his immense power into elite offensive production. A 780 OPS is solid. He's at a 116 WRC plus. It's above league average, but he's not showing the, you know, immense upside that we expected from him, mostly due to a failure to make enough contact, as Caglione is striking out nearly 30% of the time. Luckily, since the beginning of May, he's gotten his K rate down to 26% without affecting his impressive elite batted ball quality. And it's going to be hard for me to ever be out on Caglione because of how impressive his Statcast metrics are. He's got a 100th percentile 60% hard hit rate, so the best hard hit rate in baseball, a 98th percentile 116 mile per hour max exit velocity. He's got a 96th percentile 94 mile per hour average exit velocity, a 95th percentile 76.7 mile per hour average bat speed, and a 91st percentile 15% barrel rate. A lot of those stats are measuring the same thing. They're all reporting the same thing, but just the fact that he's in the top 10% in all those stats is super impressive and suggests that he will continue to be one of the best power producers in baseball. That hasn't really manifested yet, but I would expect that to increase, especially as the weather heats up in the now homer-friendly Kauffman Stadium. And I could see Caglione going on a tear the rest of the season and eclipsing 30 homers by year's end. The power is just so elite. All he has to do is make enough contact to tap into it. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Tuesday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances, opening with Slade Ciccone, who did all he could, but the Guardians lost to the Yankees. He went 5 innings, allowing 6 hits and 2 earned runs, walking 2 while fanning 7. He induced 12 whiffs with 28% CSW across 87 pitches. And the opponent makes this a bit more impressive, bit more of an impressive start than it actually is for Ciccone. But that being said, Ciccone hasn't had much to cheer about this year with an ERA that was over 5 before this start. This wasn't a case of good batted ball luck for Ciccone either. Yeah, he was lucky to strand 8 base runners for just 2 runs and was fortunate to produce a 50% put away rate in 2 strike counts after being around 35% all year. But he did make a clear change here, relying on his cutter at 89 miles per hour as his primary pitch, and it led to success that we haven't really seen from him that often. The cutter is clearly Ciccone's best pitch, and it continued that trend here, inducing 6 whiffs with 35% CSW. However, the cutter did serve up the homer that accounted for both runs against him, and Ciccone didn't really have a clear intent with it, just throwing it all over the zone. That's sort of how all of his pitches were, and I honestly don't think it's enough for us to start trusting Ciccone. I know he had a great run last year, and he's shown glimpses this year, but it just doesn't seem like he's got command of his whole arsenal. It's also not an overwhelming arsenal that suggests that without the best command, he can still succeed. However, it is worth paying attention to see if the cutter emphasis and the corresponding results that we saw here, if those stick in Milwaukee next, then maybe we start to lean into Ciccone as a potential streamer moving forward. And lastly, we have Dustin May, who helped the Cardinals to win in Queens, tossing six shutout innings, allowing four hits and one walk while striking out six. He induced 10 whiffs with 31% CSW across 101 pitches. And I've been banging the drum for May recently as he erased two terrible starts to open the season with a run of ground balls and weak contact, producing decent ratios. But the strikeouts were missing, but they started to appear in May. Is there any correlation between that and Dustin May's name? But regardless of that silly joke, May's success has only continued supporting an approach that already gave him a solid floor. The strikeouts give him a ceiling worth chasing, building off of that solid floor. And after failing to fan more than five batters in his first seven starts for a 16% strikeout rate, May has struck out at least six in five of his last six starts, including a pair of nine strikeout outings prior to this one, producing a 28% strikeout rate during his last six starts. This was his first scoreless start of the season, and he now has a 2.89 ERA and a 1.09 whip across his 11 starts since those season-opening disasters. And with his new strikeout upside manifesting across multiple starts, as well as the solid floor he already displays thanks to a heavy sinker and command that allowed him to consistently produce weak contact and tons of ground balls, May is someone who should be rostered everywhere and is an easy start versus the Padres up next. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Tuesday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, Brian Baker pitched a perfect ninth for his 18th save. Fernando Cruz had a hitless five-out save for his first save of the year. David Bednar was unavailable after pitching on back-to-back days. Alex Lang had a hitless ninth for his fourth save. Zach Maxwell pitched a perfect 11th for his first save. And Mason Barnett had a perfect six-out save, his first of the season. And in terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Clayton Beter pitched a perfect eighth up by three. Orlando Ribalta was set up for a save opportunity before the Nationals tacked on an insurance run in the eighth. And I think it's a clear closer committee in our nation's capital as of now. Rico Garcia served up a homer to allow the zombie runner to score in the 10th and to take his first loss. Tanner Scott allowed a run pitching the ninth up by 10. He had it pitched since Friday, so this was a maintenance outing for Tanner Scott. Pete Fairbanks pitched a scoreless ninth after the Marlins scored four runs in the eighth, and for some odd reason, he earned his third win thanks to a kind scorer's discretion here. Yoan Duran allowed two runs without recording an out to blow his first save and take his third loss. Louis Varland allowed a run pitching the ninth in a tie game, but he earned his third win when the Blue Jays walked it off in the bottom half. Raisel Iglesias pitched a scoreless ninth, but served up a two-run walk-off homer in the 10th to Brayden Montgomery to take his first loss. Sir Anthony Dominguez pitched a hitless eighth in a tie game, and Grant Taylor pitched a scoreless ninth, but then allowed the zombie runner to score in the 10th. However, he earned his second win when the White Sox walked it off in the bottom half. And it's starting to look like Grant Taylor might be the closer for the White Sox, and I wouldn't be surprised if they start leaning into him beyond the role that they wanted him to pitch as some sort of swingman who reaches 100 innings so they can transfer him to the rotation next year. I think they might be deploying him as the closer because he's clearly maybe the best pitcher on the entire roster and they're winning games. The White Sox have a record over 500. So if they're really serious about winning, then Grant Taylor should be their closer. Kirby Yates pitched a perfect ninth up by nine. Were the Angels just trying to get his confidence back after Monday's blown save? Who knows? And lastly, Mason Miller pitched a perfect ninth in a tie game that the Padres would lose in 11 innings. But if you'd like more information on relief pitchers, check out Rick Graham's daily articles over on pitcherlist.com. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now we'll look forward to Wednesday, June 10th, a day in which we'll have a full slate of 15 games. My matchup of the day is Shohei Ohtani versus Jared Jones. Excited to see what Jones can do in a real challenge of a matchup versus the Dodgers. I have all the faith in Jared Jones in that one. And we'll also see Shohei Ohtani continue to do the two-way thing that he's done all year as he's produced an ERA under one, just an incredible season thus far from Shohei Ohtani. In terms of probable starters, we've got five guys in the auto starts tier, including Ohtani. We've also got Chris Sale on the south side of Chicago, Drew Rasmussen versus the Red Sox, Carlos Rodon in Cleveland and Jesus Luzardo in Toronto. Our probably starts tier has six guys, and that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Christian Scott versus the Cardinals. But he may not be starting as an opener is scheduled right now, and that opener could be followed by David Peterson instead, with Scott going tomorrow. So if that is the case, our streamer of the day would be Peter Lambert in LA against the Angels. Lambert is very solid. He doesn't have great command of his secondary, so he hasn't shown the strikeout upside that he did early in the season, but he's been certainly a very solid Toby, if not a Holly, thus far. I'd also keep an eye out for Brandon Young versus the Mariners. Young has shown a solid floor thanks to a good fastball. He's sort of akin to like a Sean Burke or a Ryan Nelson, somebody with a good fastball, but not really the secondaries to support it. And the Mariners aren't that great actually, this one is outside of Seattle, and the Mariners are good against right-handed hitters. So this is, you know, bottom of the questionable start tier, but I do think Young's fastball is good enough to get him some success against the Mariners. In terms of pitchers with an opener, David Peterson might have an opener versus the Cardinals if the Mets choose to go that way away from Christian Scott. In terms of hitter suggestions, I'd look at Padres hitters versus Brady Singer in Petco Park because Singer has a 5.89 ERA. I'd also target Cubs and Rockies hitters in Coors Field. We'll see Shota Imanaga square off against Michael Lorenzen, and that one could have fireworks. And lastly, I'd target Brewers and A's hitters in Las Vegas ballpark. That ballpark has been playing like a bandbox, and we'll see Brandon Sproat square off against Jack Perkins in that one. Now we can close things out with our relievers to watch. Kirby Yates has pitched on back-to-back days, so expect Sam Bachman to be the top option for the Angels. Brian Baker has pitched on back-to-back days, and Kevin Kelly has pitched back-to-back and three of the past four, so Cole Sulcer or Garrett Clevenger will be the top option for the Rays. Louis Varland has pitched in three of the past 4 days, so if the Blue Jays want to give him a day off, they'd go to Tyler Rogers or Jeff Hoffman. Yoan Duran has pitched on back-to-back days, so Brad Keller should be the top option for the Phillies. Mason Miller has pitched on back-to-back days and in four of the past five, while Jason Adam, Adrian Morahone, and Bradley Rodriguez have all pitched in back-to-back and three of the past four. So Ron Marinaccio or Yuki Matsui are the top options for the Padres on Wednesday. And lastly, Clayton Beter has pitched on back-to-back days, so I'd expect the Nationals to turn to Gus Varland if a save chance arises. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all of the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler. Tune into YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast. And make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.